This is the Afternoon Brief on High FM with Michael McKenna. Focused reporting, sharp analysis, and the local stories shaping our lives. Daily updates in a fast-paced world.
Well, why are municipalities paying more for water tankers than water infrastructure? Now, for many of us, turning on the tap and expecting clean running water has become anything but guaranteed. Now, across the country, communities are increasingly relying on water tankers as aging infrastructure continues to fail. But what if the real problem isn't a lack of money, but rather how that money is being spent? Now, a recent report has revealed that one municipality spent three times more on water tankers than it would have cost to repair its water infrastructure. Now, this is raising serious questions about governance, also long-term planning and accountability. And joining us now to just dig a little deeper into this issue about municipal management, we welcome back Gabriel Krauss. Gabriel is an executive director of IRR Legal and also a senior fellow at the Institute of Race Relations. Also, Gabriel has spent years analyzing public policy, governance, and service delivery issues within the country. Gabriel, good afternoon to you, and welcome back to the Afternoon Brief.
Greetings. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so this story is about much more than water tankers. Let's take it from the top, the symptom of a bigger problem. What does it actually reveal about the state of governance in some of our country's municipalities?
I think at the highest level, it shows that value for money in public procurement is not the governing principle. You can look back in our history and find a number of reasons why a lot of municipalities ended up being run by people who don't really think it's their job to try and take the amount of money that's being spent by ratepayers, by residents and so on, and take that money and get the maximum out of it that they can in a particular service or a particular good. Get as much water, infrastructure maintenance, whatever, as you can out of that rand. That has not been the driving principle for, honestly, most municipal procurement officers and policy makers for quite some time. And I don't think it came from people who were evil or unusually selfish or unusually corrupt. I think it came from people who had a very strong distrust of the value for money idea coming out of apartheid. You know, apartheid wasn't value for money. It was wasted a lot of money as well. But what it was is often it turned out to be the case that where you had a white area, then value for money would apply. And so the idea was somewhat tainted. Anyway, I think that's the high level description. I can also get into the mechanics of how these contracts have been decided and why it is the case that over and over again, the nub of this story is that instead of going for a long-term fix that means, you know, really dealing with maintenance issues with pipes that are leaking and fixing those pipes, replacing those pipes where they need to be replaced, instead you've got this situation in a number of municipalities, but one in particular, it's called in Free State, where what's happened is that since 2016, the water that has been serviced there has been coming on the back of a truck, which, you know, mm-hmm. is a very expensive way
water
to deliver
tankers, right?
Water. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we call it a water tanker, but I think the less glamorous term for me is truck, and I've collected water and I've seen it done, and I've done some interviews with these truck drivers. I mean, it's not you're basically delivering it on a truck into a JoJo tank, and it's an extremely extremely inefficient, expensive way of doing it, and that has not changed for years, and it has exacerbated the unaffordability issue for those who are only half plugged into the system in the first place and really need to be fully plugged in and provided the basic essential necessity of life, which is water.
Okay, but now why do then such temporary fixes, if we can term it that way, if we can define it in such a way, why does it appear to so often replace permanent solutions? What is not being grasped here?
I think that the One part of the answer certainly is corruption. So I haven't covered the particular story of the day, but in Mpumalanga and in northern KwaZulu-Natal, I have been in rural areas where they're serviced by water tankers, where I've spoken to residents who have said to me that the reason it works out that way is that the water tanker company, tender company, can pay a bribe, in effect, to the municipal officer that makes the decision on resource allocation, and then they get the tender. If you go by, you know, you could also imagine, well, why not just bribe, if you're a construction company or a water pipe fixing company, why not bribe the guys to do that? Instead, well, it turns out that the markups are much bigger for water tankers than they are for pipe fixing. So one of the cases that I covered in Harry Smith, and this got national news coverage for a while, because Harry Smith, literally, it got to the point where they had no water at all, other than water tanker water, for 6 weeks. And that had partial water for over 3 years, until a couple of farmers actually went with a couple of taxi industry kingpins and collectively went to deal with the issue. And the farmers fixed the pipes, and the kingpins needed to be there as muscle, because the farmers had gone before to try and fix the pipes on for free on behalf of the municipality. And then the municipal officers came to intervene and said, you're not allowed to do that. And technically, you're not actually allowed to go fix public infrastructure. But why are they stopping it if they're not fixing it themselves for years? So then the farmers and the taxi kingpins got together and said, look, if you really want to try and stop us, and there was a change of mood, and it became a bit more collaborative. But that is sometimes what it takes in order to solve these issues, because on the other side of it, there is ultimately muscle, guns, and corrupt dealing that are benefiting from the water tanker situation, because it's a very easy game to fix. So part of the thing that's not being grasped on the part of, I guess, watchers, is that, you know, there's this corrupt element, but I think a lot of people do actually get it. The other element that's not being grasped is that value for money is a core principle of all countries at municipal level that deliver goods and services in a way that services ratepayers. And in South Africa, if you go into Parliament, and I've been in the National Assembly, I've been in the NCOP, and you ask for value for money procurement, if you say that is what we want to do, the politicians from the ruling coalition, almost all of the GNU, there are two exceptions, the DA and Freedom Front Plus, will all start saying mealy-mouthed things about how value for money is not the only thing. You've got to do this, you've got to do that. And in particular, in the case of the ANC, they'll say, at the very least, we should be deviating from value for money in order to drive BEE. And the Zonda report has said, you know, that's kind of where the problem starts with fighting corruption, because it becomes so complicated to administer an efficient system when the rules of the game say that you should be deviating from value for money. Then it becomes hard to tell, where are you deviating because it's a good idea, because it suits your policy preference? Where are you deviating just because it suits your own personal pocketbook? It becomes very hard for auditors to deal with that, and you know, for Treasury to deal with that. And then if you think to yourself, like, how much of municipal bureaucracy in South Africa is staffed by people who kind of came in, I guess, in middle age, not with the world's best training in that kind of stuff. It's, you know, South Africa is not like a country like France, which has had a municipal bureaucracy that goes back for centuries, where you have people who, you know, would grow to primary school and they'd be dreaming of working in a municipality like their granddad and their great granddad and so on and so forth.
Right.
You know, we're still very new and very fresh, which means we don't have a lot of institutional memory and strength in terms of dealing with difficulties, in terms of thinking like, well, let's not spend another billion on the short-term fix. Let's rather spend $1.5 billion on the long-term fix. But then next year, we don't have to spend anything at all because we've actually just fixed the issue. That kind of thinking is not something that is embedded in the institutional memory of a lot of municipalities. So, and if you add it all up, I mean, municipal debts to water alone is now in excess of 28 billion rand. You know, wow. I saw a headline last year saying municipal debts to water boards are 10 billion rand, and that seemed like a big headline. But there's been 4 billion added this year to date, and a lot more last year. So it's actually 28 billion rand of outstanding liabilities to water boards. So it's not only like everyone supplying water is a bad person. Some of the truck suppliers are very good companies, you know, addressing emergency needs.
Of course.
Some of the infrastructure fixers are doing, and they're not getting paid 28 billion rand. And that debt sits like a albatross around the neck of any small business that's trying to get in there. It
Hi, Gabriel. Are you there? Okay, Gabriel, I'm so sorry. In studio, I have lost you. I cannot hear you live in studio. I think I can hear you coming across live.
They're not able to really plan their financial futures properly. It's just who are making money hand over fist.
Gabriel, I'm so sorry. We seem to have encountered some technicality
there. I can hear you very clearly.
No, it's fine. We seem to have got you back. There was a bit of a technicality going on there where I lost you in studio, but I could still hear that you were coming across live on air. But from what I've gathered, what you have outlined to us up till now, let's just consider now our communities. I mean, beyond the financial cost to municipalities, the corruption and all these, shall we say, processes, procedures and policies which parties come up with regarding what one ought to be doing, let's look at what impact does unreliable access to water now have on households, businesses and local economic development.
It's pretty strongly negative. On the farming side, obviously, there are issues. Like in this particular Free State municipality, there's a lot of cherry farming that goes on there, which is a nice labor-intensive kind of farming because packing cherries often requires a lot of hand labor. So you've got a lot of semi-skilled people who are getting jobs out of that. There's other fruit and nut growers doing well there as well. And they're very dependent on water supply that is reliable and effective. That's pretty obvious. The next layer, and so if they don't have it, you know, they're not going to grow the business. They're, no one's investing more in drip feed or above ground irrigation if they're worried that come, you know, the dry season when they need to be pumping a bit of water, the municipality is going to say, sorry, we can't do that because we've run out of money, because we've been spending all our money on water tankers that are kind of our chums. The next level is if you think of small businesses, like if you drive around rural Free State, you will often find the following thing. There used to be three lawyers who worked in this little town village, and there used to be three dentists, and there used to be two hardware stores and so on, and five churches. And now there's only one lawyer and one dentist and one accountant and one church. And part of that is to do with, I guess, overcoming the apartheid spatial planning thing, because a lot of the time you'll have like a former whites-only area, a former black-only area, and there'll be a lot of growth in the black-only area and not a lot of growth in the whites-only area. But that's on the residential side. If you are looking at the service provider side, the main driver of, if you ask, I mean, I've spoken with dentists, accountants, lawyers who've moved from little Free State towns in this area to bigger, you know, then they're not going all the way to Joburg or Cape Town or whatever, but they're going to Potchefstroom, they're going to Parys, they're going to like the big tentpole places that are still being fairly well run or that have enough kind of money that they're able to make their own solutions.
Sure.
Like the Harry Smith situation. So, but those little towns that used to be growing stagnated and then shrink. And if you have, part of the problem is you ask them, why are you moving? They say, I can't be here. The electricity wasn't reliable. The water's not reliable. The roads are completely shredded. So my cars, like I can't drive a normal sedan. I can only drive a bucky. Farmers can drive buckies. I don't want to drive a bucky. I'm an accountant. So those guys leave. Then what happens is the rest of the villagers who are working in other sectors also feel like moving, because every time they need to do some serious kind of business or get a serious kind of service, they need to leave town as well. So you hollow out, you white ant the small towns of the Free State, of rural South Africa more broadly. And that is the worst kind of place to do damage economically, if what you're most concerned with is job growth, because it's precisely those areas where small businesses are able to absorb labor from the parts of South Africa that have the highest unemployment at a semi-skilled level that kind of gives people a way onto the ladder up. And it's exactly that rung of the ladder that is rotting out and being smashed out and being left empty. So, yeah, okay, the guys at the top in Sandton, this is not an issue. But those who want to get up, I've got nowhere to go.
Gabriel, as we wrap up our conversation, so much more we can really delve into regarding this issue, but we've got about a few minutes left. Not to press you or rush you or anything, but looking ahead, you know, as we continue to face these infrastructural challenges, are you optimistic that municipalities can realistically turn things around, or do more fundamental governance reforms need to happen first? Where do we stand now in the bigger picture of things?
I think that Treasury has, as has been discussed, I guess, everywhere, like 69 billion rands worth of government grants is theoretically the tap on if that has been turned off. I think that is going to send a wake-up call to a lot of municipal officers. Mm. I think that, you know, you can wish for the world's, you know, greatest Japanese engineers to come in and take over. That's not going to happen. It's like, we have the people that we have.
Yes.
In most cases, that's not going to change. And those people can do better with the right incentive. So I think Treasury is sending the strict message that if you don't get your house together now, we're going to pull the carpet out and it's completely going to collapse. I think that is going to be bad news for 10% of those municipalities where nothing's going to change and they're just going to lose the money that is coming from the national grants. But the other municipalities will have some improvements on the ground, and that's going to be good for them. That is not enough. On top of that, you do need, I think, a serious look at procurement reform at national
Gabriel, I'm
you know, at legislative level. And and that's going to happen in the 2020s. I do think that could change. And in the meanwhile, you just have to keep fighting it through. Mm. So I think it's not a, you know, it's not ideal.
Gabriel, as always, thank you for sharing your insights. And thanks so much for joining us once again on the Afternoon Brief. And of course, we always look forward to welcoming you back. I mean, reliable access to water, one of the most basic responsibilities of local government. And yet, what did we hear today? It reminds us that good governance isn't simply about responding to crises. It's about preventing them through sound planning, responsible spending, and long-term investment. Certainly, this conversation has stirred up quite a bit of responses. Yvonne is saying, Michael, surely the problem in this country is mismanagement and corruption. Any money goes straight into their pockets. Yvonne goes on to tell us how roads outside where she lives, the complex, is deteriorating and what have you, because there's no management. There's no oversight. There's no responsibility. And Bianca believes, yes, people now this year, that we find ourselves in this year of local government elections, we really need to change our mindset and look at what exactly is causing the problem. And this is our chance to correct it. Linda says, Michael, it's a job. All government employees must apply, qualify. Junior staff must be trained by professionals. The current leaders got it wrong. Treat it like a business, not a family-run entity.